Invest in yourself. Take time for your inner true self. The inner self is the platform from which all else happens. Creativity, intelligence, wealth, fulfillment, and outer activity comes from the ability to think properly and to plan properly. And to think and plan properly, one has to be established in the source of thinking and planning, in the source of thought, which is deep within us. All great wise people have guided us to know thyself or find the kingdom of heaven within yourself.
Hello, my friends. This is Nishant, and welcome to another episode of the Nishant Girl Show. I want to help curious and passionate people how to reduce overwhelm, be more mindful, and manage focus. So join me in my mission to bring awareness about transformation and mindful living as I interview fascinating people and deconstruct their personal stories, tools, and habits to help you live a life of excellence. My today's guest is Dr. Tony Nader. Dr. Nader is a medical doctor trained at Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Harvard University. He is the best-selling author of One Unbounded Ocean of Consciousness, and he is a globally recognized expert in consciousness. As Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's successor, Dr. Nader is head of the International Transcendental Meditation organizations in over 100 countries. From the Americas to Asia, from Europe to Africa, Dr. Nader guides the Transcendental Meditation program and its advanced practices and the practical applications of this technology in all areas of national life, including education, health, business, defense, agriculture, and conflict resolution. So without further ado, please enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with Dr. Tony Nader. Dr. Nader, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Wonderful to be with you.
Thank you so much for being on the show. So I thought I will start with a simple question to you. How do you find joy and happiness in your life?
It's a combination of factors. The main one is being internal rather than external, which means the ability to be settled within oneself, to be at peace with oneself, and have a sense of feeling in tune with one's desires, hopes, plans, and of course, all the necessary aspects that are needed to feel protected and to grow. So happiness comes from both a sense of security and a sense of evolution, that something is happening, one is growing. And so that is really the basis, and it all is a question of perception. Oftentimes, one can be happy in the simplest situations and can be unhappy in the most sophisticated situations. So the outside is not necessarily a reference in terms of wealth, in terms of pleasures that can come and go. Happiness is more than that. Happiness is a continuum of well-being, the sense of growth and development. And that happens to me through having practiced transcendental meditation and learned to know myself and to have peace within and a platform of stability on which I can build and create and develop and know how to be patient and when to move forward and how to navigate my life.
For listeners who may not be aware of transcendental meditation, could you describe what is this meditation mean?
Meditation is a technique of the mind, so that's why it's called meditation, but there are so many kinds of techniques of the mind. Some of them you have contemplation, you think of beautiful things or ideals or a proverb or feelings of love and even thinking about circumstances, what one can do. All of this can be meditation. There is also concentration where you try to make the mind focus on one thing or another. And that is sought to help to allow the mind to be directed in a way that it will help it not to be jumping around right and left all the time. And transcendental meditation is different from any of these. It's different even from mindfulness, in which one has open monitoring, which means you monitor, you expect, you look at, you watch without judgment, your breathing, your heart rate, your feelings even, your thoughts. So you try to take a distance by watching all of these aspects. Transcendental meditation, you don't try to direct the mind. You just allow the mind to follow its natural desire, which is always to go for more and more in life. That's what we want. Our nature is to search for more happiness, as your first question, to look for better things to eat, better things to hear, better things to smell and see and all of that, and even more wealth and more strength and more beauty. But all of these are outer aspects. So the nature of the mind to look for more takes us through our senses to the outside. In transcendental meditation, we change the direction of the mind towards the inside, and we allow the mind to go where it wants, which is naturally towards more. But in this case, more than the most is within us, because that is the source of our intelligence, the source of our creativity, and therefore the mind naturally wants to dive within. If we say that the mind and consciousness are like an ocean, active on its surface, and as you go deeper, you have more and more settled quietness. That quietness is the area from where the thoughts come. So we usually have a thought on the surface. It's like a bubble coming from the bottom of the ocean, and it rises up and then becomes bigger and bigger until it reaches the surface, and there we are aware, I have a thought. And this means we are usually aware only on the surface level, and we don't go to the source of intelligence, the source of creativity, the source of thought. So in transcendental meditation, we dive inwards, and through the nature of the mind, wanting to settle, wanting to be happy, wanting to be quiet, it settles down and experiences what we can call our true inner self, the source of our intelligence, our creativity, as we said, source of our thoughts. And that means transcending. Transcending means to go beyond the surface to the deeper and deeper values, and go beyond the deepest value to the self, to the sense of being, the pure being, pure consciousness, which we are. So that gives deep rest to the mind and very profound rest to the body, because mind and body are intimately connected. And that gives this very deep inner stability, inner strength. It's like you anchor your ship in the true depths of the ocean, and your awareness expands from being on a limited waves on the surface to now having the entire ocean in its awareness, in its being. So it expands awareness, gives deep rest, mind and body, because they are connected, the body rests deeply, removes stress, and allows more integration. So that is, in few words, transcendental meditation.
I have so many follow-up questions on this. And before I go deeper into those questions, I would love to ask you that if you're in a social gathering and if somebody asks you, Dr. Nader, who are you and what do you do? Then how do you usually respond to that?
Usually, of course, you want to respond from the perspective of what the people imagine of what one should respond, you know. You cannot say, I am absolute pure being. And they'll run away. They think you're funny.
You're crazy.
Or something like that. Or crazy, yeah. So you have to answer from the relative perspective of what you are. And you can say your name, your profession, your nationality, your position, your work. And then if they want more, you know, you say about who you are, what are your interests, what is your role, what do you do, your family, if they like. So it grows from very surface kind of general expectation to more detailed understanding of one's profession, one's role in life, one's hopes, one's plans, one's vision of what one can do, like that.
What is your nationality?
I am originally Lebanese from Lebanon, and I have also French nationality. I grew up at a French school, and there is French in my distant family, so I had the French nationality also.
While reading about you, I learned that you were in French Jesuit school. Your primary and secondary education was in French Jesuit school, and you had a keen interest in theology and philosophy. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
Then how do you develop your interest in theology and philosophy at a very early age?
This is, you know, every one of us has circumstances and environment and things one see and listen and one's predispositions. And so listening to discussions about philosophy and about the nature of life in my environment and with my friends and at school, I got interested to solve these big problems. And so that's why I got very interested in the nature of life, the nature of the divine, what is our role, where we go from here, why we are here. You know, these are sometimes some of the questions all of us ask in one way or the other when we are young. And then we give up because we think maybe there is no answer or no real interest. And I, on the other hand, pursued this. It was for me something that was important to resolve. And so I started studying and looking at different literatures, different philosophies to understand that.
Do you recall some books that you read in your childhood days to get more idea and interest in philosophy?
Yeah, I read about, you know, Sri Aurobindo. I read about yoga. I read about existentialism, and I read about theology. I read the Bible, the Quran, the Testaments, the Old and the New, and Buddhism. So, you know, and then went into others, you know, like Leibniz and Spinoza and others, even Nietzsche and those who were contradictory sometimes with different ideas, to have a more complete vision about, you know, Veda and Buddhism and Hinduism as well. So I tried to see what are the different opinions from different perspectives.
I'm curious to ask you, Dr. Nader, what was your family reaction when you were diving into all these philosophies at the time?
They were bewildered, you know. They wanted me, to be a regular doctor as I was studying medicine. At this, you know, as I started growing up and decided on a profession, and that they were happy that I was in medicine. And then when I completed medical school, I took a sabbatical kind of and went to Switzerland, where Maharishi was. And I studied to become a teacher of transcendental meditation. So that was just after finishing medical school. And that was also bewildering for my parents. They wonder what's going on. you know, should specialize, should do science, should be a doctor. And I was explaining to them that this is a part which is very important. It's usually neglected, but it's part of ways to help and to cure and to be better, not only through the body, through chemicals and medicines, but from the angle of the mind also. that the mind has a big influence, particularly having been interested in these philosophies and all these thinking, I knew that something is powerful in the mind. And particularly also when I was growing, there was a war between different belief systems and people were literally killing each other. And I felt like, why is that? How come a human mind makes such decisions to suffer and to make others suffer for just belief? Why should that be like that? Why they can talk it through? And of course, there are predispositions. And I thought in medicine, I will be able to solve all this by studying the physiology, which will tell us what happens in the mind. Because at that time, I thought the mind was just a product of the functioning of the body and the nervous system. But then I found that it's really different, and that approaching everything from the mind side is even more powerful and more complete. So I explained to them, to my parents and friends, that I like to explore this, and they understood. They felt, yeah, this is, and that I'll come back and continue my medicine, which I did. I did come back and do research and study even more. But then ultimately, comparing all the pros and cons of being on the physical level or on the mental level, I found that I wanted to go deeper in the more holistic side of consciousness and awareness and improve that. And that it by itself can help the entire physiology, not in a just a targeted piecemeal way, but in a holistic, complete way.
In which year did you go to Switzerland after finishing your medical school?
This was 1980.
1980. I was born in 1987. Oh. So... yeah. You mentioned about Maharishi. So who is Maharishi Mahesh Yogi?
Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was a physicist himself. He grew up and studied physics. And he's Indian. And he met a teacher, Brahmananda Sarasvati, who was the Shankaracharya of Jyotirmath. And he was deeply interested in spiritual development and human development, and also in understanding the full value of life. And so from this, he spent many, many years under the training and apprenticeship and tutelage of Brahmananda Sarasvati, who was, as we said, the Shankaracharya of Jyotirmath in the Himalayas. And gained from him all the knowledge about Veda, about transcendence, transcending, meditation, and deep knowledge about life. And when his master, whom he calls Gurudev, left his body, he had before given him the direction to bring this knowledge to the world. And so he went for several months, maybe almost 2 years, in the Himalayas after the departure of his guru, his teacher, and then started to have the urge, feeling, to come to the world and give this knowledge. And what he said is that the nature of life is to grow, the nature of life is the expansion of happiness, and that we should all be living in bliss consciousness, because that is the nature of everything, Satchit Ananda, that the nature of pure life, pure being, is pure consciousness and bliss, which is the nature of that reality. And yet people don't live that. They don't live that because they are not in touch with it. They are not in touch with their true inner self. They are floating on the surface, being tossed around by the waves, which are like the thoughts. Mind jumps from one thought to the other, sometimes with purpose, sometimes aimlessly, sometimes out of worry. But it's always searching, searching, searching. And as we said at the beginning, it's searching for more, but always in kind of the outside direction only. And he had that knowledge to bring the person back to themselves and establish them in their true inner being. And he felt like he had that precious knowledge. So without having any money or any support, he just took his his dhoti and his sandals and he walked down from the Himalayas towards the south. And people met him on the streets and they saw him radiant and dressed like a sannyasi. And they start to ask him questions and to ask him to teach them things. And he started to teach, and more people gathered and more people were benefiting. And then he was encouraged to go to the West. And again, with almost nothing, he left and went to travel on a boat and then arrived in the side of San Francisco and California, and some people just received him there. He didn't know anybody or anything. And then it started growing and growing, and people were so interested in having so much benefits, and scientists started to do research on it, and, you know, doctoral degrees and universities, and it grew to become a huge movement.
How did you connect with him, and what events were leading up to meeting with him in person?
When I went to Switzerland in 1980, there was a conference on health that he was organizing on Ayurveda. He was bringing Ayurveda. And I had a scientist that I knew from France who was working with him and who knew me well. And he asked him if I could meet and I come. And he said, yeah, sure. So I came and offered him a flower, and I was completely overwhelmed by his grand, you know, radiance and presence and bliss, that I really totally felt taken and surrendered immediately when I met him. We talked very briefly, and then I had to leave anyway. And this was the first encounter. And then I went to the teacher training and then met him again, actually during my teacher training, which means to learn how to teach transcendental meditation. I had a chance to meet him again several times.
Do you remember the brief conversation with him in your first meeting, if you may share with us?
It was more silent than talking. I was kind of myself taken. I didn't really feel to talk much. I suggest Jay Gurudev, which is an expression that he
Jay
uses.
Gurudev.
Yes, to his teacher, his master. And he asked me from where and what I was doing. And I told him I'm finishing my medical school, just doing internship. And he gave me a flower with a huge radiant smile. And then I went away. That was very short at the beginning.
Dr. Nader, how would you encourage people to connect with their true inner being? We are living in this modern world where there is a lot of noise externally. So how do we connect to our true inner self?
I think the self is not something that comes from thinking about. We have a sense of ourself, but it's the sense of a limited self. Of course, it's a continuity of the self. We are who we are, who we have been as a child, even though the body changes, the mind changes, the education change, the looks change. We go through so much, and yet we know it's the same person. But that is a person that is changing, that is transforming, that is growing, developing, and that has different moods at different times, different feelings, and different expectations. And we don't know the absolute self, the self that is truly our real nature, our real inner being. For that doesn't come through thinking. Through thinking by itself, on the surface, we examine ourselves. And we examine ourselves as one kind of a person. As you said, if people ask you who you are, you ask yourself who you are, and you say, I am this friend, I am this parent, I am this son of or daughter of. And like that, I have this profession, and these things can change. So by thinking, you cannot really know the self fully. You can have an idea about your strengths and weakness, about your qualities and your preferences. But to truly know the self, you have to experience it. So it's an experience rather than a thought process or an intellectual analysis. And that experience is a direct dive into oneself. You dive into yourself, and the mind takes you to that deep level. So there is a technique. That's why we say transcending, to transcend, to go beyond. It is something you cannot force. It's something you allow the mind naturally to go to. And there is a technique for that, and that technique is transcendental meditation. That's the most effective, most direct way of reaching oneself. We have many other techniques that help a little bit of stress release here and there, relaxing. That's fine. But to go to the depths of the ocean and establish yourself in that level of pure being and strength and stability, you have to allow the mind to transcend. But then, of course, when you are on the depths, going diving deep, the mind might be distracted by thoughts, by emotions, by memories. And so you have to know how to handle that, how to deal with that. And this is the technique. So there is a technique that one learns. It's very easy to learn. You, within 4 or 5 days, one has becomes perfect in it. There is first an introduction to give you an idea of what it is, and then an instruction. And the instruction is one day with a teacher, personal instruction. So it's a one-on-one. And then you start to practice, and then you have 3 days of verification and follow-up to make sure you can handle all the situations that can come. And for these 3-4 days, 1.5 hours or 1 hour a day, depending on the person, you are on your own. So you do it by yourself. You don't depend on a teacher anymore. So that's the beauty of it. It is simple. It's very easy. It doesn't require a change of belief or the change in habits, or it's not an exercise. And it's so easy, so natural, because you don't have to force anything, that people really like to do it because it's enjoyable and it's really do less and accomplish more.
During what time in your day do you practice meditation or transcendental meditation?
Transcendental meditation is practiced 20 minutes morning and evening. Usually you can do it before breakfast and before your evening dinner, because we prefer that one is not fully, like the digestive system is not engaged during the practice. It helps the mind to settle down more, and there is less dullness. So these are good times, because you wake up, you start your day with a refreshing deep dive into the self, and you are then clear and dynamic. And then you go through your day activity and have, you know, some stress or some fatigue. And then you wash all this out in the evening early enough. So then when time comes to rest, you are with a rested mind.
Thank you for explaining, Dr. Nehru. I was going through your Instagram page and found one very profound question that I don't have the answer, and I would love to get your answer on that. So the question is, we have observed that it is difficult to experience pure consciousness by concentrating or controlling the mind. Why do you think that is?
Because concentration is focusing on one point. So it is a thought process with an object that you have to concentrate on. So you're forcing the mind to stay on one point. So if the ocean, which is the ocean of the mind, of consciousness, is active on its surface, as we say, and calmer in its depths, taking an object like a flame or breathing or maybe even a thought and forcing the mind to stay on the surface level does not allow you to dive deep within. So it is not by forcing the mind that we can allow it to experience the inner silence, the inner quietness. It will try to go away anyway. Usually when people use this technique of concentration, it is possible that as the mind gets tired of trying to focus, it lets go. And during that moment of letting go, there is a little bit of diving inside. And then one can feel, oh yeah, I have experienced something. But it is not through the concentration that it happens. It's through letting go of actual concentration. So to concentrate and force things is not part of the nature of the mind. It settles on things naturally. The mind can concentrate and focus when it finds something pleasant to attach itself to. You know, if you have a honeybee that is buzzing around and then it suddenly is quiet, it's because it has found the nectar in the flower. So it stops being noisy and buzzing because it has been attracted to something. So it is not searching anymore. It has found its fulfillment. And then it settles and it's quiet. The mind, when it reaches something that is fulfilling, it settles on it without forcing it to be there.
When you feel overwhelmed or unfocused anytime, if so, how do you manage that in your personal life?
I would say I need rest. And so I will, you know, go back to the self. And then it's natural that I will be able to easily focus on the job at hand. And my mind wouldn't be shaken by things. So, and this happens gradually to become more and more stable within yourself. So transcendental meditation not only brings this ability during the practice, but as you practice regularly, you start getting that sense of stability and inner strength and peace, even when you are very active on the outside. And that's why you start being able to focus in a natural way. This is one of the things that really attracted me during my medical studies. It was a very demanding time for study, but also it was a time of civil war and lots of pressure from every side. And I had to work and to study and to focus and all of that. And I found that when I had started transcendental meditation, my ability to focus and to study quickly and absorb faster had increased tremendously. And so it was a very beautiful investment in time rather than time used away. So what you do during the 20 minutes morning and evening gives you benefits even of quality time during your daily activity, because you are able actually to naturally focus more and attend to what you are doing in a much more clear and well-structured way.
If someone has never practiced meditation, how should they start from a very basic level?
It's very easy. Children from the age of 5, they can learn, and they do really well because they are innocent and don't complicate their life. You know, it's so simple. And they usually learn a technique which we call walking technique, which means they keep the eyes open and they, you know, they have the technique. And from age of 10 on, they close the eyes, they sit easily in a chair. There is not much activity to do. Just sit easily and close the eyes. It's not a physical technique, it's mental technique. And then you just do it. It's so simple that, as we said, within 4 or 5 days, 1 hour every day, it's enough to really practice it and master it and then do it on your own. So you have to find a teacher. There is, you know, of course, a website. TM.org is a very good one for the United States. TM for Transcendental Meditation.org. Or you can go to my website and visit drtoninader.com.
What are the best qualities that someone should look in a meditation or TM meditation teacher?
What is beautiful is that Maharishi has trained us, all the teachers, and has created a system of training that is extremely systematic and we can say scientific because it's repeatable, it's systematic. And the teachers who have been through this program, they all teach in the same way. Because you don't really depend that much on the wisdom of the teacher or the qualities of a personal level. You just follow the steps and you do it yourself. So it is really a do-it-yourself technique that does not depend so much on a follow-up and guidance by the teacher, except, of course, the teacher has to give instructions and take you through the steps properly. So Maharishi has almost digitized the teaching, and that's why now we have an app through which one can not learn the technique, but be followed up. So to learn the technique, you have to be with a teacher, a qualified, certified teacher, during one session only, basically. And then the rest you can do through the app, but the teacher will connect with you and be with you for a short time every day for 2-3 to check and make sure you have no questions and that you are following correctly. So it's a very, very do-it-yourself simple technique.
Yeah, definitely Maharishi has had a big impact, inspiration in your life. And I'm curious to ask you, what lessons, maybe 2 or 3 lessons, have you learned from him, if you could share with us?
Yes, of course. I learned from him. I learned from him to look for what one can say, the third element in a sense. The third element, we can call it like this, when you are under a situation when you have the choice between two things and you feel I absolutely have to choose between two things, take a step back and see if there is not a third choice that might allow you to fulfill actually both choices one way or the other. Or by taking a little step back, then there is a clearer and better choice that can come and a better solution. And this happens also naturally. It's not like a forced thing, but the more you are established in your inner self, the clearer it is for you to see the solutions and to see where things are in a natural way. And so this was one thing which is very important. Also is to be caring, to always be caring for the highest, to achieve the highest, to have your attention about doing the right thing in the best possible way and not be attached to the results. So you want the highest and you work your way towards the highest, but don't be attached to the results because the results depend on so many factors that include the environment, other people, your previous choices, you know, what we call karma that you had from before. And so while doing the action, you should act fully in the action, not make a mood, not try to, you know, to be within yourself or not within yourself, just be with the action. And not be worried about whether the results will come and when it will come, but just do the best you can for the highest ideals and be patient with people because people come to you, they have their own stories, their own history, their own fears, And don't look at them from a surface point of view, even if they come like being aggressive or negative. Find something in them that is positive and make this part grow and this aspect evolve, and guide them like that so that they can grow themselves, because everyone is searching for more. Some people are ignoring something, some people are confused, they are stressed, but in general, there is something that you can, you know, find that will help you allow them to evolve and to grow. And so that is where you can say, you know, try to learn how to see with your heart rather than just judging from the surface value.
At this present stage in your life, are you searching for anything?
Yeah, of course.
What is that?
To see the whole world enlightened and no suffering, no pain, and peace and harmony everywhere. So the sense of self actually expands from that self which is in this body to the self of the whole world ultimately. First, it expands maybe to your close people, your close friends and relatives, and then as you grow and see things, you want everyone to be happy, you want everyone to be peaceful. You want life to be better. You want to make sure life works for everyone. And since this was, you know, my guiding light in a sense, and I found this technology to be profound, that's why I launched myself in it. That's why I went into it.
You mentioned about being patient and not attached to the outcome, enjoying the process. So does being patient and not attached to the outcome come easy and naturally to you, or you have to personally work at it and make efforts at it?
It comes more and more easily as one practices transcendental meditation, because one starts being established in the self. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, yoga sta kuru karmani, which means established in being, perform action. So to perform action in the best possible way, one has to be established in the self, established in being, rather than being tossed around by situations and circumstances. One has a platform of stability and inner strength from which one can act. And this is how you have patience. You have patience because you are established in that field of infinite patience, field of peace and quiet. And so you're not yourself shaken. And therefore, patience becomes natural. Now, on the way to that, before one is established fully in that state of inner stability, one can remind oneself to take a step back if there is something happening and don't react reflexly, but just take a step little bit back, think about it a little bit, consider the situation, and then you will be acting from a more holistic perspective, which will include your upper parts of the nervous system rather than just your emotional inner aspects of your limbic system inside the brain, which are the fight or flight response that propels us into acting a little bit in a knee-jerk style response and impulsively. So give your time to the brain to consider.
Thank you for sharing. And in your new book, One Unbounded Ocean of Consciousness, you talk about some simple answers to the big questions and the role of consciousness. So what is the role of consciousness in our existence and humanity?
In the book, I describe consciousness as it is, which is actually the source of everything and the primordial value of life and living and being and everything and existence. So consciousness is the stuff of life. That is really something that one has to look at deeply in order to be able to absorb, because we are all living in a paradigm where everything is physical and material. We see our, you know, chairs and tables, we see our body, we see money, we see food, we see things on the surface, we see damage, we see happiness, we see clothes, we see planes and cars. Of course, all of this is material, physical. It looks like that, obviously. Mm-hmm. And we feel that consciousness is something abstract, something that is not concrete. You don't touch it, you don't smell it. And therefore, we imagine that consciousness is kind of different than the material life, and that the material life has to be dealt with on its own level, on its physical level only, on its material level only, because that's what it is, and the mind is something else. Well, more and more research and study in the nature of the physical and the nature of the consciousness and the mind leads to the conclusion that I present in the book, and that is that actually everything is consciousness. And it is consciousness interacting with itself that appears as matter, that appears as physiology, that appears as the physical. So it is a question of appearance that shows us the physical to be what it is. But in reality, everything is ultimately a dynamic of consciousness, a dynamics of consciousness.
You say that my consciousness is talking to your consciousness right now?
Right, absolutely.
Please continue.
Absolutely. And then ultimately, your consciousness and my consciousness are the same, the ultimate value. You have one dynamic of consciousness, that is you, of course, personally, and that's Nishant. And there is another dynamic of consciousness that is Tony or Dr. Nader, whichever you like to look at me. So that consciousness is dynamically interacting with another consciousness. And everything is an interaction between different levels and different qualities and different dynamics of consciousness. So not only with me, but with even, you know, if you have a pet at home, or if you have a plant at home, or you have a house, which of course you have, or if you have, you know, a job, or people, or stars, or planets, they're all dynamics of consciousness. Some are very small quality of consciousness, very limited. You know, there is much less dynamics and quality of consciousness in a cat than in a chimpanzee, and a chimpanzee less than in a human, and in a cat more than in a tree, and in a tree more than, you know, in a stone. But the whole thing is a field of consciousness. That's what the details and logically presents in a sequential way to really be able to understand how is this so. Not just like a nice idea or a dogma or an imagination, but actually a sequential logic that shows, based on science and discoveries and logic and reasoning, that actually we can truly, genuinely assume and see that consciousness could be everything. And so if consciousness is everything, working from the level of consciousness, you can improve your life, and you can see the results, scientific results on transcendental meditation, which enlarges and improves and widens consciousness. It improves mental ability, it improves behavior, it improves the physical body, the health, the wholeness of the body, and it also improves society. We have done research where a small group of people practicing this program, transcendental meditation and the advanced techniques, which we call siddhis, together in one place, they change the behavior of individuals in society. They actually change, you know, by reducing, they reduce crime, reduce conflicts, And we've done this study over and over again. So it's not like some imaginary thing. And it has been published. These studies have been published in very respectful, reviewed scientific journals. So how is this so? How does it work? It works because consciousness is all there is. And we also, from the physics perspective, we say consciousness is the unified field of all the laws of nature, which are the basis of all manifestation. And if you act from that deep level, that deep field, you can modify not only your situation as an individual, but because since everything is connected through this collective consciousness, you can change the mood in society. You can change the decision making in society in a positive way, in a way that leads to growth and development and peace in society. And this has been followed up very carefully.
Yes, I have two more questions for you before we wrap up this conversation. So, Dr. Nader, you have spent decades in medicine, science, spirituality, consciousness. So I'm wondering, how have your personal relationships with your spouse, children, have evolved over the years?
They have been very peaceful, very, very kind, very loving and caring. So it's not that you become separate from society or you become a recluse, as people think, that you know, because you are on the spiritual, on the transcendental and like that. And people thought that this was the path. But Maharishi has come to say we have 200% of life. 100% inner and 100% outer. So you live your life fully and actually enjoy it more. And you live your inner life fully and live from that platform of infinite strength and stability.
And when you say 100% outer, I would love to say that I love your dressing sense and I love the way you wear blazers. I'm very inspired by your dressing sense.
Thank you.
Because a lot of times people think if somebody is spiritual, you got to wear this, you got to be like that. We can have 100% beauty internally and externally.
Exactly. Beautiful. Beautiful.
And my last question to you is, what is the impact you want to leave on this world, Dr. Nader?
I'd like people to know that consciousness is primordial. Consciousness is everything. And use the technology of consciousness for personal full development and for society to be in peace and happiness and harmony between the family of nations.
Thank you. Last but not the least, where can people find you online and any parting thoughts, anything you want to share?
Invest in yourself. Take time for your inner true self. The inner self is the platform from which all else happens. Creativity, intelligence, wealth, fulfillment, and outer activity comes from the ability to think properly and to plan properly. And to think and plan properly, one has to be established in the source of thinking and planning, in the source of thought, which is deep within us. All great wise people have guided us to know thyself or find the kingdom of heaven within yourself, or I am Brahman, I am totality, I am wholeness. And this you find in all wise teachings. And here is a technique, transcendental meditation, that allows you to know yourself, experience yourself, and know that unity at the basis of all diversity. We do not need to remove diversity. We want to enjoy the diversity and beauty on the surface level as being different one from the other, different colors, different beliefs, different qualities. And yet, no, we are all one. One unbounded ocean of consciousness with many, many waves. So know that you are the ocean and accept to be a wonderful wave on the surface and enjoy life in bliss, which is the birthright truly of everyone. Thank you so much. Thanks to you.
This episode is brought to you by my own Friday newsletter. Every Friday, I share a newsletter which describes my new learnings. And these learnings can be in the form of new books I'm reading, different podcasts and blogs I'm exploring to learn new topics such as trauma healing, relationships, mindfulness, psychology, and much, much more. You can find the newsletter link at my website, https://nishantgarg.me, nishantgarg.me. Once again, nishantgarg.me. And thank you so much for listening to this show. Thank you for listening to this podcast episode today. If you did enjoy this, please subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, or you can visit https://nishantgarg.me, nishantgarg.me. You can also share this episode with your loved ones to help them live a fulfilled life. You are not alone in this journey. We all struggle in life. There is no shame in talking about it. I go through my highs and lows. I get depressed, and these practices help me in living a resilient life. You can also do this. You got this. Don't judge yourself. You are doing the best you can. And thank you so much again.